Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, $3,000, a Radeon R9 295, Crossfire 4K gaming goodness, AMD or NVIDIA for the best Linux gaming, AMD's got some power civic convenience, and lots of storage geekery with Malvin Tano. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 265, recorded May 1st, 2014. $3,000, a GPU gaming mayhem. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Patrick Norton, and this is Twitch's weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most exciting, most joyful news about computer, tablet, and occasionally even cell phone hardware. We talk about parts, we talk about building things, and today I bet we're going to talk a lot about storage because Malvin Tano, soon to be located in Kentucky and no longer in Tejas, joins us in place of Mr. Ryan Schrout, who is en route to Kentucky and is actually in a big silver bird right now. This is apparently the big silver bird. Notice the eyes looking up to the horizon. How's it going,
Everybody's
man?
Everybody's just going to Kentucky, you know.
Kentucky hits critical mass. So it's about what's new and exciting? Have you packed? Obviously, you haven't packed your entire place yet because there's a giant collection of toys behind you.
Yes, that's one of the last things to go so that I can continue to do podcasts such as this one.
I can tell that you've been collecting more items back there as you pack the rest of the house.
Yeah, actually, the shelf it's turned into like, oh, there's another trinket in this old box. Oh, trinket shelf. You know, and I just keep putting stuff on it. So
it's exciting.
Yeah, there's like 3D glasses and weird crap on it now. I just, whatever. Anyway. on the far end of the move.
As somebody just pointed out in the chat room, if you are running Windows XP, Microsoft dropped an update. Go figure. Because there's a, quote, serious security flaw in Internet Explorer version 6 through 11 that left users vulnerable to attack. And they started rolling it out at like 1 o'clock this afternoon. So do me a favor, update your system, even if you're using Windows XP. That way the GRU won't eat your face.
Yep, you have to click past the warning that says they don't support it anymore so that you can go to Windows Update and get supported and update.
That's complicated. So SSDs getting cheaper. Are we going to see sort of, 25 cents a gigabyte by Christmas so I can finally buy a 1 terabyte hard drive?
Not 25 cents. That's now you're really digging. You're just like being a little too optimistic there. But when
35
we've seen
cents
like,
a gigabyte?
Well, we've seen like 40 on sale.
I know.
Yeah.
Once you hit 40, I mean, it's just another 15 cents, right?
No, because it's platters, right? So they're still making platters, and it's really very slim margins when it comes to seeing sales for like 50 and 40 cents. There's a kitty. He was
kitten shot
my leg to death. Yes.
is that thing like, anyway, is it even 6 weeks old? Is it weaned yet?
It is 5 weeks old.
And, come on, show us the kitten. Because you keep looking there. Sleepy
kitty. Yeah, he's tired. I'm going to put him back on the lap. Okay, there you go. Go back to sleep.
It's my 2-year-old look like today.
So by Christmas, huh? I think you might see 30.
Wow.
I don't know about 25.
I'll take 30.
If you see 30, I think it'll probably come in the form of TLC drives, or like Samsung, Samsung Evo, that kind of stuff.
Which is fast enough for me.
Yeah, those drives are really, really good, actually. So I recommend the Evo to a lot of people. The only thing you really gain over MLC, over that specific TLC drive, is just you can sustain write speeds that are higher for a longer period of time with MLC. Whereas that TLC drive on the Evo does a little trick where it has a certain number of gigabytes of SLC cache. Mm-hmm. So from the write standpoint, you actually end up with better than MLC performance for as much cache as you have.
Right.
So, and the cache ranges from, I think, it's like 3 gig up to 12 gig, something like that. So
should I look for drives with 12 gigs or?
Well, you get 12 gig, and it depends on the capacity that you go for.
Got it.
Right. So I think 12 is in the 1 terabyte all the way down to the 500 gig, I believe, mm-hmm. is 12 gig of cache. it's still a lot, even with 3 gig. Right. How often is a typical person, especially with you know, especially put in a notebook, right? Where are you going to get 3 gig of data to put onto that thing at a higher data rate than the TLC write rate? In other words, you'd have to be writing 500 meg per second to fill that cache, you know?
Right.
Yeah. If you're writing at 100 or 200 meg per second, it'll never go to that cache. It'll just go straight to the TLC because it can go that fast. So,
sweet.
Yeah, it's really just like, where are you going to get it? You know,
cutting and pasting large video files over and over again because that's so useful.
Yeah. That's what you'd have to do. You'd have to do it from within the SSD as well. You'd have to do like right. from, because where else are you going to get it from? Anyway.
Point taken. If we talk about the Radeon R9, well, Radeon R9 290, oops, sorry.
Yeah, no, go for it. This is funny. We were joking about this on the podcast last night because Ryan had to connect two power supplies to the system.
This is the one where he had the 1500, like two 1500 watt power supplies to run this.
No. If we had the 1500, it would have been good. But we didn't have it yet. It didn't come in time. So he had to, I think it was like a couple of 1200s that he hooked up to it. Yeah, so there's pictures a little bit down on the article. Is the Corsair AX 1200i, but like two of them, I think. Or no, he used like an Antec for the other one. But it's so, funny, I mean, it is, we, like 1200 watt power supply, sorry. Not enough. You can arc weld with it, but you can't power two of these.
So what we're talking about here is you know, usually we talk a lot about, you know, like 750 Ti's. This is a great card for the money. It's $150. Oh my goodness, look at the system you can build. And we always love the newest, fastest GPU ever. And this is just completely unhinged by anybody's standards. Radeon R9 295 X2 Crossfire at 4K Quan Hawaii GPU powerhouse. Ryan worked with the crew over at Hard OCP on this one. You know, I can't remember if this is a family podcast or not, so I won't read that first line. But I'm just going to scroll to the second paragraph. For example, what if you decided to upgrade your graphics hardware to improve performance and allow you to up the image quality for games to unheard of levels? Rather than using a graphics configuration with the performance found in a modern APU, you could decide not to run one, but four discrete GPUs in a single machine. You could water cool them for optimal temperature and sound levels. This allows you to power not 1080p or 900p, not 2560 by 14, but 4K gaming, 3840 by 2160, all for the low, low price of $3,000.
Yeah, so you should put the you know, Dr. Evil air quotes around that when you say it, because
$3,000.
Because for a gaming PC, even for, yeah, that's kind of out there for just the graphics cards of your gaming PC, right? You're not even counting the rest of the PC. You're not counting that 1200 right. watt PSU that you had is probably not enough to power said two cards. Right.
But it's funny.
You're not counting the upgrade to your air conditioning system.
Right.
That you might need to do, because this thing could actually draw close to 1500 watts. Right. That means it's then being pumped out into your room and warming up yours. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the second page, right, the power consumption for the entire system. There's this insane, actually the final page, power, sound, and closing thoughts. It is completely unhinged, right? Because, you know, a GeForce GTX 780 Ti 3 gigs, you know, is 408 watts. An SLI, it's 583 watts. The Radeon R9 295 X2, 8 gigabytes, which is just a monster card to begin with, 663 watts. A pair of them in Crossfire, 1,261 watts. That is bordering on what my freaking washer and dryer and oven pull.
Actually, hold on. I have 1,261 watts right here. It's this right. Ohm space heater on high, on the high setting. That's how you get that many watts.
Sound levels were fantastic. Like, you know, 41, the Crossfire rig was like 44.8 at low, 41 for a single card. I'm going to quote Ryan here. There is no doubt in my mind that the dual Radeon R9 295 X2 quad crossfire configuration we have tested and shown you here today is the fastest gaming setup that a PC user can buy today. 11,264 stream processors at your command through four full-speed AMD Hawaii GPUs gives a user an unparalleled amount of capability excuse me, let me say that one more time, an unparalleled amount of capability for PC games, including running them at top image quality settings and 4K resolutions. A game where Crossfire shined the most, we saw scaling rates of 81% in Battlefield 4, 89% in Crysis 3, 89% in Tomb Raider. Those would be great results if we were moving from a single GPU to a set of two, but to see those kinds of games from going from two GPUs to four GPUs is actually a more impressive feat. And then there were some sort of fail areas for it. Like the BioShock. BioShock Infinite showed higher frame rates, but an increase in stutter that made it more difficult to play. Grid 2 scaled by 25%.
Yeah, there were some places where the scaling was awesome, and then there were some places where it was just kind of like, eh. And now it really is just software dependent, right? It's the game has to support it properly. The drivers have to cooperate. Everything has to kind of work the right way. And you always, if you're ever going to run into weird issues with graphics cards, it's always going to be some form of SLI or Crossfire mm-hmm. that's going to throw it into that, right? Every time you try to make it's really, if you think about it, you can boil it right down to back before you had multiple CPU systems, multiple core systems, right? Everything was designed to work with one core, and then you tried to start building two and more core systems, and all the software was just like, yeah, I'm still going to just use one core. So it's the same thing, right? Just imagine if you just took a piece of software designed for single core operation, and you're like, no, you're going to use two. Just do it. And then, you know, it's not going to scale perfectly in every case.
No, but it scales pretty good in a lot of cases. Ryan does clearly warn everybody, if they get to the last page of this article, is look, you know, check the games because, you know, before you slam down your Visa, because some games are really not going to, you know, if your favorite game doesn't see much of any improvement, you're going to feel really stupid after you drop $3,000 on a pair of GPUs. And Ryan also states, quote, I have always stated that getting the maximum performance single GPU card tends to be the best solution for high-end gaming. With today's hardware, if you're targeting a resolution like 4K, that might be an impossible task. Even the R9 290X and GTX 780 Ti can't handle Crysis 3 there. So if you can't fall back to a single GPU, I think the fewer GPUs, the better, the fewer problems and potential hiccups you'll run into, not to mention wiping out your credit rating. So maybe a single Radeon R9 295 X2 is the right solution for you at a much more reasonable $1,500.
Yeah.
Damn. So plus the cost of the power supply.
I say that's so much money, but there is an NVIDIA card that is more money than that, right?
It's more than I have ever spent on a system in my entire life.
Yeah.
Although by the time I got the docking station for my Macintosh Duo 200, the 120 gigabyte hard drive and the 12 megabytes of RAM, I think it was megabytes. We may have been very close to $1,500.
Yeah, I'm of the same mentality as Ryan. I have always ever only had a single GPU card in the system. Right. And regardless of how hard I want to push it, I just will not go into any kind of SLI/Crossfire thing just because I don't want to deal with those headaches and inconsistencies. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't kind of thing. Right. I just don't. Yeah.
I gotta say, 4K is interesting because we've had a Puget system in, and you just running a pair of 290Xs and Crossfire and one of the new the not so new anymore, but the Asus PQ monitors. You know, it's a $3,000 4K monitor. When you have games that'll actually support 4K, they're gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
you know, so many
pixels.
Yeah, or just working. I want a desktop just to work on. I'm tempted to get a 4K desktop just to be able to actually do work on it because the new Samsung, $700 Samsung 4K monitor is coming out that Ryan, I think, ordered for testing. Yep. Before we frighten the chat room and the audience with more discussions of $3,000 GPUs, we should talk about something at the opposite end of the spectrum, another GPU driver showdown, AMD versus NVIDIA in Linux. Scott wrote this up for PC Purr. This is interesting. Results are mixed and a bit up for interpretation, which I think is kind of just life in the open source universe sometimes. Phoronix is the website with this, and there's a giant Flash advertisement that just wiped out my entire view of their website because I have Flash disabled. But basically, it's GeForce 700 versus Radeon RX 200 series with the latest Linux drivers. And if I refresh this page over and over again, perhaps I can get
the long and short of it is basically you're going to get weird results based on the fact that it's, you know, this is Linux gaming, right?
Right.
Which is not exactly a mature thing. So, you know, it's really completely hit and miss right now. But since things are kind of catching up, actually, there was a hint at the end of that article that kind of a little play on words by Scott. And he said, I expect the thing, this will be a hot topic as soon as it picks up steam, you know. So, which is true, right? Because then you're going to see potentially more people gaming on a Linux platform and for dedicated gaming platform. And, you know, hopefully that'll staple things out considerably.
Well, that was kind of the immediately when I read that. They talked about, you know, everything's open to interpretation. It's like everything in Linux gaming now, I don't think is going to matter nearly as much as when Steam machine, like the Steam OS hits maturity and the Steam machines arrive, you know, technically 2014. So I'm assuming they're going to start showing up like September, October, November for the Christmas holiday season. And there are rumors, right? You know, you build yourself a Steam box right now running the Steam OS. You got like 8 games. Well, you did a few weeks ago. And apparently they've got something like 1,000 games running on the Steam machine, which reeks of major Wine emulation or some serious efforts going on at Valve behind the scenes. And I'm just really curious to see where that ends up. Because right now, you know, if you bought a, you know, if you could actually buy a Steam machine right now that actually was a Steam machine, you'd be able to play a minimal number of games. You'd probably be praying that it was dual bootable with Windows. But if you are curious though about gaming performance on Linux, that's the article to look at right now. And the short answer, like Alan said, is it's a hot mess. Did you see Amazon's new smartphone?
Yes, I saw the link.
Well, I was laughing, right? Because like last week, it's the OnePlus One, and it's like a $299 Nexus Thrasher, which is essentially an Oppo phone rebranded for what is an Oppo partially funded effort. You know, OnePlus One, it sounded like this Chinese company coming out of nowhere, which it kind of was, except it, you know, wasn't exactly coming out of nowhere. Boy Genius Report says this is the look. Exclusively obtained a new image of Amazon's smartphone that reveals the handset's design for a first time ever. And you know what? It's flat and it looks a heck of a lot like every other, you know, black smartphone that's available right now.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how thin it looks. Yeah. 4.7 inch display, 720p. This is their core. Their sources have been talking to Boy Genius. Quad core Qualcomm Snapdragon processor, or Snapdragon if I use the D. 2 gigs of RAM, 6 individual camera modules, and a highly customized version of Google's Android operating system. Do you think you'll be able to voice search anything other than Amazon Prime content?
Yeah, it'll just be like, what do you want to watch? What do you want to watch on Amazon Prime? Replace the remote from the Amazon TV thing with this one.
Oh my goodness. So it's interesting. You know, I'd like to see more of the 3D interface in actual action, but I don't know. It's been interesting using some of the Amazon Fire TV, where it was like this beautiful experience as long as you stayed inside of Amazon's garden. As soon as you wandered out, it was like, you know, a 2-year-old Roku experience. It's just no. Yeah. Not loving this, but you know, I love Amazon Prime, so it's a good question. Are you currently running Android or iOS?
I've been iOS for a while when it comes to the phone stuff.
Yeah, I got
into it way back, like very beginning. Like somebody, I was like just the kind of techie guy at work, and someone's like, "Hey, I was on like a Windows mobile phone. I was that guy buying the insanely expensive HTC handsets from overseas." So that I could run like the, you know, the latest XDA developers build and all the other, you know, and I was doing that for like the longest time. And then some guy at work is kind of like, it's like, hey, I got an iPhone 3G. I'm trying to jailbreak it. Can you help me out? If you hook me up, I'll give you my old iPhone, original iPhone. And so I was like, okay, twist my arm. I'll spend a few minutes and research this and do it for you. So I jailbroke his phone for me, gave me an iPhone. That was the end of it. That was just like, oh, okay, this works. I'll just start using this. And I just kind of stuck with it. And then with the field that I used to work in, that I have since retired from, I heard considerably more security issues with Android than with iOS stuff. So every time I would think about kind of jumping ship, that some really nasty thing would be out there, and I'd be like, oh, okay, I'll give it another 6 months, and I just kind of kept doing that, and we're still not there for me, at least.
Right.
I'd like to do it because I use Google for so much other stuff, so it would actually make a lot of things easier for me, as far as just, you know, all the Google integration you get on an Android device. So it really is kind of holding me back, but I am not confident enough in the security of Android.
Interesting thought. Yeah, yep. It's interesting. I know a couple of people who started a mobile security company. It was basically built around finding the interesting things going on in Android, and then got into finding the interesting things going on in the networks. And it's a little frightening the more you look at it.
Yeah.
Interesting article up on, while we're talking about Google and the future. Google Glass parts estimated to cost less than $80. It's up at Digits, the Wall Street Journal's new tech section. Alistair Barr wrote that one up. Google Glass currently carries a $1,500 price tag, but the components packed tightly inside the device may cost the internet giant a lot less. Not too long ago, they were saying like $300 when they debuted like a year ago. And Tech Insights Teardown.com puts the cost estimate at $79.78 on the components inside of Google Glass. So,
yeah, but that's, you know, you're not even adding any research.
Yeah, and that's
you know, I mean, it's like taking a brand new iPhone or a brand new Nexus, you know, insert model number Nexus here, or, you know, anything brand new that's cutting edge. And, you know, somebody had to figure all that stuff out and piece it all together. And, you know, probably for a small fraction of those parts might have not existed without that product existing in the first place, right? Some of those might be kind of purpose-built parts. I don't want to say like specific just that one thing, but they're probably being sold now, but there really wasn't a push to make those parts, you know, until this device was kind of being pushed.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny. It's like a pretty simple, you know, processor. It's like 16 gigabytes of NAND flash memory. I think the display probably cost them a fortune to get up and running. And, you know, there's been a team working on Google Glass pretty much full time since 2011. And there was a lot of pretty talented engineers and PhDs working on that one. Interesting article, though. It'll be, you know, I'll be curious to see when Google actually ships or when they actually choose to drop the price on that. Teardowns are always fun to look at.
It is a very dense device.
Oh my goodness.
Just looking at it. And that's an awful lot of stuff to cram into that little frame, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if they shrank it one more iteration before they actually shipped it.
It kind of reminds me of every time I've tried to open up a Sony device. They're always just micro miniature stuff in there. Like, you just don't know how they crammed it in there.
Oh my goodness. And Geek Missionary points out in the chat room, we want thicker smartphones with bigger batteries. Yeah.
I would gladly give up. I would give up a couple of millimeters on a device if it would give me, you know, like all day, you're using the thing all day battery life, not just, you know, occasional use and you might make it through the day battery life.
I think cell phone manufacturers and designers are obsessed with having the thinnest phone ever. And Robert Bigelow's like, walled garden, Patrick. And it's like, you know, sometimes I'm okay with a walled garden if it means the thing just delete expletive works.
Yeah. the rumors on the upcoming, there's rumored upcoming delays on the larger version of the iPhone, the rumored larger version of the iPhone, because they can't make the battery thin enough.
Right.
So you're going to make it, you're making a bigger phone, but you're trying to make the battery even thinner. So you're going to negate the whole fact that you had a larger phone by just shrinking the battery down thickness wise. So, you know, if you make it the same volume at the end of the day, you didn't gain any battery life, people. What are you doing?
At this point, we just don't know.
No, we don't.
Man, The new motherboards are coming hot and fast. Maury wrote this up for PCPro.com. Asus next generation motherboard preview. With the release of the next generation desktop board line imminent, we wanted to give you a taste of the new Asus offerings. Asus offers support for the current and next generation Intel Haswell processors, as well as support for SATA 3 and next generation SATA storage solutions with their next generation boards. So basically Z87 boards, updated UEFI BIOS with more GUI-driven interfaces and wizards, quote, particularly aimed at those users who don't want to muck around in the advanced mode settings. I can appreciate that. Additionally, all board lines feature updated heatsink designs and aesthetics to further differentiate them from their Z87 counterparts, enhance their AI suite software with the five-way optimization functionality instead of the four-way optimization functionality integrated into the last generation of AI suite. Five-way optimization functionality, which sounds really dirty the more I say it, integrates TPU, the turbo processing unit, EPU, energy processing unit, DigiPlus, Power Control, Fan Expert 3, and a turbo app into a single cohesive entity. And then and one time, click to rule them all and in the darkness bind them.
And every time, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Asus motherboards. They're pretty much the only ones that I will use. But I completely gloss past that whole list of features on their motherboards because it's gotten so outrageously large. And whenever I do one of their motherboard installs, I never install any of those things. I'm just like, give me the computer that works. I don't want all those extra things coming up.
I'm just still fascinated by the Sabertooth Z97 Mark I motherboards with the tough Fortifier Thermal Radar 2. High rigidity and superb cooling via the expertly engineered backplate heatsink and thermal pad, reducing operating temperatures by up to 7 degrees Celsius. Military-styled cover the thermal armor with flow valve. Dual fans to optimize airflow for maximum heat dissipation! Exclamation point. I'm torn between thinking some of these are really pretty and well thought out motherboards, especially the ROG stuff. The workstation stuff looks really, really good. And being in the same position that Ryan and I were last week, where it was like too many models, too many sub features, too many segments. But, you know, I'm pretty sure Asus knows a lot more about selling motherboards than I do.
There was one of those Malcolm Gladwell talks. Wasn't it like a CES talk or something? And it was a tomato company. I forget which one, but like one of them came out and like dominated all the other ones because they just came out with a bunch of different types, and it was because people wanted more choice or something like that. So maybe Asus watched that video and took it very, very seriously or something. I don't know.
At this point, we just don't know.
But the thing you're kind of dealing with though is you've got like six or seven different features that you want to kind of be on or off, right? And it's like, how do you divvy those up? And to come up with anything less than, you know, like a dozen motherboards out of that is kind of tricky, right?
Right. I don't know.
it should be like kind of build your own motherboard. I really wish you could just like custom, you know, I want this audio chip. I want this. I want that. And then
I want the other one. Weeks.
And it just shows
that would be pretty awesome.
That would feel like amazing.
I mean, given how problematic at times just getting a mass manufactured single motherboard design to behave.
That's true.
I'm not entirely sure I'm ready for bespoke motherboard manufacture.
Oh, come on, bring it on. You don't want to troubleshoot your motherboard, Patrick?
Not even a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe. Speaking of bespoke manufacture, if you have to ask the price, the MSI GS70 Stealth is not for you. Back at CES, we saw several teasers showing off the MSI GS70 Stealth, writes Jeremy Hellstrom on PCPer. And, well, Hardware Secrets has a review. This is a gaming laptop with a 120-watt rated power cord, apparently. And it is a classic Hardware Secrets 10-page review. And this thing, how do you even describe it, man?
It looks like just a monster of a laptop.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like huge and heavy necessarily,
because
they say it's only 6 pounds.
Not like the days of the desktop motherboard inside of a quasi-portable enclosure with a, you know, power supply the size of your foot carried around with it to weigh 11 pounds.
Well, I would bet that the brick is pretty large for this thing.
Yeah, I bet it is. Core i7-4700 HQ processor, 16 gigs of RAM, 17-inch full HD screen, two SSDs in RAID 0, a GeForce GTX 765 M video card, high-end gigabit Ethernet and Wi-Fi controllers, and much, much more.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. If you are looking for a completely unhinged gaming laptop, MSI is willing to oblige.
There are people that will do it, too.
Gaming laptops just age gracelessly.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. I remember there were times when you can order, like you'd go for a specific brand laptop and there were somewhere the model came with different graphics. And
right.
So you could sort of upgrade that model. You'd have to go on eBay and look for someone selling like the board, basically. Like old Dell laptops, right? You could upgrade it. It came with GeForce this, but the option was GeForce this, and you can like spend $100 and get that card.
I spent so much time cracking open a couple of Dell netbooks I bought where it turned out they didn't solder the sockets for certain upgrades onto certain models on that. So it's like, I can drop in this board and I can have the cool feature. I can't do that because the entire socket is missing on the motherboard I have. Yeah. And then suddenly you're screwing around on eBay at 2 a.m. looking for a netbook motherboard.
I've been there, not for netbook motherboards, but I've been there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's fast, it's expensive, and if you want to get the full deal on that, Hardware Secrets is the place to go. What's going on with AMD with the unveiling of Beema and Mullins?
Oh, it just Josh was here. Josh went on for like 20 minutes on the podcast last night just going into this whole thing. But the gist of it was basically the power consumption goes significantly down compared with performance.
Cool.
And I forget the exact kind of things there, but you're talking like, all right, so let's see. Actually, the last couple of paragraphs is what you want to look at on this one. I mean, you're talking 15-watt parts and 25-watt parts, right? That are actually performing pretty
staggeringly
well.
Low. The power consumption in these is...
Yeah, that's very low power consumption. And, you know, you're talking... like very capable chips here for, especially given that low amount of consumption. Mm-hmm. But yeah, any more detail than that, and we'd have to call Josh.
we can probably sum it up with the, you know, 2x the compute performance per watt versus the competition for mainstream PCs, which is a little vague, but still, you know.
Even if it's a ballpark, you're still, you know, it's still a significant advance, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Eventually, you're going to hit the point where you have just full PCs just in your phone, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Josh was expecting to sort of yawn his way through this one and actually surprised himself was surprised that he was impressed with some of the announcements on that.
Yeah, actually, we were not expecting as much of an announcement or as significant of an announcement as we ended up getting.
Right. Well, it puts AMD in a position to compete against, you know, Intel for Bay Trail and the other low end stuff. So hey, go AMD! Oh my goodness, building a home theater PC. I actually was really excited about this one because I have a 630 to play around with, one of the inexpensive NVIDIA cards. Not the best gaming card on the planet, but absolutely badass because it's a power sipping card and gives you just enough 3D to sort of keep you awake on a home theater PC. Hard OCP did a nice review of Seasonic's G Series G450 power supply. Which sounds really awesome. And what's even more awesome is for, I guess, $10 more, you can get the G550 power supply, which made me laugh and just generally confused, I think, the crew over at Hard OCP, just because the pricing was so staggeringly close between the 450-watt and the 550-watt review. They were pretty happy with this one. Where did it go? Load test and DC output quality. The Seasonic G450 continues the trends we have seen from the Seasonic G series by doing very well in almost all of our performance metrics. Potentially one of the most scrutinized thing about the unit is going to be the price as it stands now, $75 with Prime shipping on Amazon, which is a little more expensive than most 450 watt units. So keep an eye out for the G550, which is going to be just 10 bucks more. And, you know, but it's nice to see the big thing they point out is as you're looking at that right now is the build quality on this is outstanding, because at this point, most manufacturers are kind of looking at three, four, 500 watt power supplies as borderline throwaways, maybe not 500 watt. But to actually have a, you know, quote, a truly modern high performing power supply stocked with high end components. So it's nice to know. If you don't need 15,000 watts for, you know, quad Radeon R9 295X2 for your next 8K monitor, you can get a decent 450 watt power supply or 550 watt power supply. And you know, it's, are you running into with SSDs? Cause I've been running into a lot of people having issues that seem to be solved once again. This is like, you know, 1995, 2005 all over again with getting a better power supply. Are SSDs are going to be even more problematic, or are SSDs going to be even more sensitive to power supply issues compared to traditional rotating media hard drives? Is that a vague question out of nowhere?
I would say generally they both would have the same kind of issues. Once you hit a certain point of power instability or voltage instability, just, you know, the communication starts breaking down. Basically, you just, the device can't really be powered. I would say SSDs are probably less susceptible to that than hard drives. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because most SSDs, the controller and everything else works, runs on significantly lower voltage than what comes in. So there's always a switching power supply on the SSD itself that's actually dropping the voltage down to even a much lower level. So I would imagine that just with the way those circuits tend to be designed and the fact that the SSD sips power compared to like a 3.5-inch hard drive, it could probably operate like a volt lower, just a guess. Like you could probably just really drop the voltage down and just keep it down. And it would probably still work given that kind of a like power circuitry that's always on the front end of it. That might be an interesting test. Actually, but how low can you dial the voltage on this hard drive and then do it to like to an SSD? And then something. I don't know. But yeah, I would say that the hard drives are probably more sensitive to it, and SSDs just, you know, using much less power in the first place. So it's less likely that that your storage at least will cause the voltage fluctuations in the first place. Hopefully. Right. I haven't.
Hopefully. What happens if you put like 400 SSDs in an array? Does it get more problematic at that point?
It'd be fine until you started writing. Right? Writing is the huge power draw on an SSD. That's because, you know, yeah.
You know, it seems obvious when you say that out loud in front of me, but I'd never really thought about that before.
Yeah, well, reading isn't trying to change voltage states. It's just reading what's there, just sensing.
Derp.
Writing is actually punching electrons through an insulator, times each bit that you're writing, and doing that at like hundreds of megabytes per second, right? So that's a lot of electrons being punched.
Sorry, I'm just envisioning sort of mayhem inside of a hard drive involving electrons getting punched around.
It's basically a spark plug within silicon, pretty much.
Point taken. That's too frightening for me to even consider if it's going to be handling my data, which actually both computers in front of me now apparently have spark plug data electron punching drives inside of them.
Yeah.
Noctua's back, the NHU14S. Mori wrote a CPU cooler review on that. If you're looking for a sophisticated brown, I've always loved the aesthetics of Noctua coolers. They're just very earth tone.
Yeah.
In a world gone mad with blue LEDs and chrome, one cooler manufacturer stood out. Yeah, thing's freaking huge, dude.
That is an enormous cooler. It almost looks like something on the back of a hovercraft.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it does.
Back of a jet boat. No, somebody found one of our old coolers that was decorating a set upstairs. You know, it was copper and about that big around. They're like, "What is this for?" And I'm like, "Cooling a very, what used to be considered a very high, you know, thermal. It was like a 125 watt part, and it was a gigantic copper Zalman cooler. They're like, "What is this thing?" I was like, "It's just designed to suck heat off of a chip." Big thumbs up for the U14S. I'm going to point everybody to the review to read that. Silver award from PC Per, and really, I don't know. They're pretty and they work really well, which is always nice, and much better than pretty and works like crap. And I'm going to point it out. Of course, there's weekly water cooling release. Jeremy wrote this up for PC Per. The 875 quote you pay for the miniaturization. The 875 basically shrinks things down a little bit. Drop support for your LGA775, but cleaned up the mounting hardware to make it easier to get inside your case. Because, you know, PC Per without either a world's fastest graphics card or a new Corsair water cooler just doesn't feel right. And now I have both, so I feel really awesome. Should we talk about the accusations that CarMax stole intellectual property from ZeniMax Media, a.k.a. the company that owned Sid, before we went to Oculus? Yeah, is that a thing? It seems like if you go to Tech Meme, there's like 9,000 articles on this right now.
It's currently a thing, but it's the thing that really, where is the quote? I'm looking for the quote that just kind of turned me off to the whole thing. I started off thinking, all right, well, you know, there's kind of anti-compete clauses in contracts, and you hear about that all the time, right? Some big head honcho for some company, like some guy leaves Microsoft for Google, but everybody's wondering, like, well, is that kosher? Like, is he allowed to just, you know, take all his knowledge and just like go straight over to the other company, you know? And there's actually is anti-compete clauses in contracts where people are supposed to be like not in that field for like X amount of time before they go to the other field, right? But the way that they worded it was like they said that like CarMax know-how, like they actually said his know-how, like it's like, yes, he's capable of accomplishing what he knows with his brain because he worked for this company in the past. I'm not buying that because CarMax probably brought, it was probably the other way around. Like ZeniMax stuff is probably what they are because CarMax's brain was there and he could probably do a reverse, you know, of that on them in the future and be like, well, I used to work for you, so that's why you do so well. You know, and
Well, intellectual property law is a hot mess. And one of the things that CarMax tweet, which I just posted in the show notes, quote, "No work I have ever done has been patented. ZeniMax owns the code that I wrote, but they don't own VR."
which is probably a valid point, right? And it's makes sense to me. You know, you can't say this one company just owns virtual reality. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you can also point out is like who owns Oculus now?
His name was in the article.
No. Who owns the Oculus? Who bought Oculus recently?
Oh, you mean Facebook?
Yes. I was waiting was it another company? Was it not Oculus? But
I thought you meant like the owner of Oculus, like the president.
No. I mean, Facebook basically bought Oculus lock, stock, and barrel, and CarMax along for the ride, and very excited about the idea of having this platform adopted sort of universally, so kids can have makeout sessions enabled by Facebook globally.
The ZeniMax thing. It really looks like a patent troll. It's like, you know, okay, CarMax leaving. We're not going to say anything. Okay, he's doing this VR stuff. We know he's doing it right off the bat. We're not going to say anything. Oh, wait, there's money? Oh, okay. We claim the stuff in CarMax's head. That's ours. He has no know-how without us. So we want a cut or something. I don't know. I would never sign an anti-compete. Like, I don't care how much money you're paying me. Sorry. Right. Like,
it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of corners of technology where you can't get in without signing 4 inches of paperwork that has to be explained to you by a team of lawyers.
That's a very interesting point, though. But CarMax was in from so early.
Yeah.
Like, what are the chances that there's even one of those in his thing? Right? Because,
like, really doubtful. There,
I would be doubtful, because if I was him and I saw one of those, say a few years later, they tried to slip one in a contract on me for a renewal or something, I'm just gonna be like, no. And then if I was in Carmack's position, right, what are they gonna say? Oh, well, you're fired. No, you can't. Not to Carmack. You're not gonna say that.
You can say anything you want to. I mean,
you could.
It's America. You have the free speech.
You don't want to have any better products coming out later. Yeah.
That would be a tough one to explain to investors or Wall Street or whoever owned the company.
Yeah, we fired Carmack because we just didn't want him to, you know, we wanted to own the contents of his brain, and he said that wasn't okay.
Yeah, the dude's basically sat in a dark room programming for the last 15 years. Like, he's really going to walk away from that gig.
But he did.
Well, you know.
Why? Because he found a portable dark room.
One last story before we take a few questions. NVIDIA announces Watch Dogs bundle with GeForce GPUs. Quick post from Ryan Shrout. If you purchase a GTX 780 Ti, 780, 770, or 760 from select retailers, you'll qualify for a free copy of the game, which of course happened several months after I bought my 770, which figures. As we mentioned last week, GTX, basically the AMD cards that have been impossible to buy or too expensive to buy because of Bitcoin mining, are pretty much available and dropping in price. Twitch at twit.tv is the email address.
The deal looks better and better the lower grade card you go, right? Because the card gets cheaper and cheaper, but you're still getting the same price game thrown in.
I like that thought.
Yeah, once you get down to the 760, if you're a budget, you know, if you're a budget gamer, and that's definitely going to become a very good option, because that's a retail price game. That's not a game you're finding on sale, right?
Yeah. No, It's nice when it's a nice game, but I can't get it, so let's move on.
Okay.
At Troll Dad Tweets, at Patrick Nord, at Malvin Tano, and let's just make this plain. These questions are all for Alan today. Just learned that two of the SATA ports on my motherboard are actually SAS. Can I use them with normal hard disk drives?
So, yes. Depending on the controller. There's a caveat, like a big caveat, right? So most SAS controllers are backwards compatible with SATA. I'll just throw that out there.
Really?
Yes. And that especially applies to RAID cards. Pretty much every RAID card that's a SAS RAID card that I've seen ever is backwards compatible with SATA. The connectors are physically the same, so you're good, really.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, for a motherboard controller, maybe if it's kind of a really off-brand, you might run into some issues. And the other thing I will say is that there's probably an Intel or even the AMD chipset controller on there, which you're going to probably be much happier with, especially if you're plugging an SSD into it. Because anything that's a RAID chip kind of solution tends to not scale very well. Like, the IOs per second that it can handle is only so much. And usually an SSD... like one or two SSDs can typically outmaneuver a lot of those RAID chip kind of solutions that would be connected to those SATS ports in the first place. So if it's SSDs, stick with the motherboard controller, you know, the one that goes straight to the chipset. That's usually your best bet. I'm just assuming that's where he was going with that, because if you're like, hey, there's more ports and, you know, and
what can I do with them?
Yes. But the other caveat to that, don't plug like your DVD ROM drive into that. It's probably not going to be recognized properly.
Right? I hate it when that happens.
Because those tend to use, like, it's the compatibility layer that goes over SATA. And then if you're trying to go through a SAS controller, I haven't tried it myself, but I wouldn't trust it to work 100%. Might just be weird.
While we're talking about SATA, if I, you know, let's say I'm building a FreeNAS box, or if I have some really unhinged Windows storage issues and I run out, there's six SATA ports on the motherboard, what's the performance hit when I start adding in SATA cards on the PCI Express bus compared to the ones on the motherboard? Okay.
It all depends on what card you use. I will say that I haven't really seen a card that outperforms a motherboard controller, first of all. Because those tend to go like right on the back end bus of, especially like the ICH Intel controllers. They're pretty darn good. when it comes to that. I think they bottleneck at around 2 gigabytes per second on the newer chipsets. And you have to fill up like 4 ports to get that,
right,
with like 4, you know, SATA 6 gigabit SSDs. So if you're to the point where you're already used up all 6 of those,
right,
and you
like I've got one build with I think 6 2-terabyte or 3-terabyte drives inside of it.
Right. So once you step down to the regular hard drive stuff, mm-hmm, most any RAID card, the hard drives, mm-hmm, are the bottleneck.
Okay.
Right.
That would be the same thing for just a standard non-RAID SATA card also.
Yes, just for the HBA, host bus adapter. That's what you're looking for. If you just like a non-RAID version of that, just a generic HBA. If you got regular hard drives, you want to hang a crap load of hard drives off of it. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't have it here to grab. It's in a box in the garage already. I want to do a build where I just keep throwing hard drives at a system. Mm-hmm. Basically, I wanted to use one of the newer technologies. There's a couple of companies out there. I'm not going to name names yet because I'm still researching all of them. But there's a few guys out there making a equivalent driver kind of solution as what the Windows Home Server used to do, but something, mm-hmm, that you could basically tack on to any version of Windows. And the end result is you just throw NTFS formatted hard drives at it and it conglomerates them and distributes. It's like file level RAID distribution. So if you want a mirror, it will just, mm-hmm, put each individual, you'll see one partition, one volume, right, and that one volume, you put a file on it, and then in the background, transparently, that file will be placed on 2 independent hard drives. And it doesn't do it in like a striping or any kind, right, of that weird stuff with RAID. It just physically puts the file on 2 drives. So say your whole system crashed and you went through all your hard drives, all the files are just sitting on there individually. Just, you know, 2 copies of each file, right? I wanted to move to a system like that with an unlimited, well, not unlimited, but, you know, obscene, potentially obscene number of hard drives that I just keep plugging into it. And I don't want to, right, do upgrades where I have to pull the old drives out and rebuild RAIDs and do all this other stuff. Right. So I went and I found a deal on the Arika 24-port card. So I have a 24-port host bus adapter. It's supposed to be a RAID card, but I have it in individual drive mode. So, and I got the I forget the name of the connectors, but basically those RAID cards have like 4 SATA or they're actually, actually a SAS RAID card that could do SAS.
Those are affordable. They're only like what, $700 a pop?
You can find them. No, the retail, they're much more, but you can find them like on eBay. You can find a 24 port RAID card on eBay for like less than $500 if you got a keen eye.
Interesting.
You may not be that insane that you want to plug in 24, but I just wanted to be, I didn't want to have a limit. I'm probably only going to have 8 or 16 drives on this thing, but it's okay. Yeah, whatever.
You're talking to somebody who put 8 CD-ROM and Blu-ray drives or DVD and Blu-ray drives into a box to see how fast he could rip 900 discs in his CD collection. So, you know,
I think you might have been bottlenecking the interface in that case. You might maybe.
It was nuts actually how little it was amazing actually how little processor memory and bandwidth ripping, you know, eight you know, CD audio is just so minute compared. Blu-ray discs, entirely different bag of weasels.
But audio, yeah, it's really not that high of a bit rate even at the end and with a really fast spinning drive.
It was pretty insane. At Malventano, anything to say about the new SanDisk 4-terabyte, 12 gigabit per second SAS SSD other than holy expletive, which is a question coming from Rob Brush.
Yes, and the holy expletive will be also for the pocketbook of anybody trying to think about buying it because it's really meant to be an enterprise drive in the first place.
Right.
Second, you're going to have a controller and connectors capable of talking to it over 12 gigabit SAS, which is actually using a separate, the connector looks similar, but it has pins on both sides. It's kind of like pins on both sides of the blades. I'm pretty sure, unless I'm visualizing it wrong, but if that's a connector, I think it is. Yeah. And
surprise!
You need some very specialized stuff to do this. And if you have that specialized stuff, fair enough. But that also means you're probably an enterprise with like racks of gear and stuff like that. So yeah, this is definitely an enterprise thing. And then you're having to buy 4 terabytes worth of flash memory, you know, on top of that. But if you're a company that needs 4 terabytes of flash memory in that small of a package, that means you're about to spend an obscene amount of money, because you're not just going to buy one of those. You're probably going to buy like a few hundred and put them in an array. And then it'll be a very fast array.
And it will cost all the monies.
But it will cost all the monies, yes.
Bring it back.
But really, it's not like this is something that could have been done a while ago. We actually, this came up on our little back-end chat on PC Per, and it's really, somebody could build right now, somebody could build a 16 terabyte SSD and probably fit it in a 2.5 inch form factor. It's just a matter of, is there a demand, right? That's the thing. Does somebody want to buy one? I don't think that's the cable.
But it's a lovely cable.
It's a lovely cable.
There
was a question that I had linked like down at the bottom. There was a Twitter question that came in at the very beginning.
About cloning a hard drive or earlier than that? Probably earlier than that.
It's at the very, somebody had it. It's at the very end. It's on the second page of the notes. It's just a link to a Twitter comment.
I will click on it if there is screaming. I clicked on the wrong link. Okay. Ben Stever, which whole drive encryption methods work best for hybrid drives, often GPT partitions other than BitLocker?
Yeah. So okay. I'm assuming by hybrid drives, he just means an SSHD.
Right.
Like, you know, you're like your Seagate SSHD, typical kind of thing, right? And those are actually just sector-based caching. So whatever encryption you're using, as long as it's encryption that is just directly translating to the drive. In other words, if you keep rewriting the same spot on you know, like the same group of sectors on the hard drive, the mounted encrypted hard drive, then that translates to writing to the same places on the disk. Then the caching is going to work the same way it would if it was encrypted or not. Because the drive's just going to... those drives really... any kind of tuning that they do has more to do with if it sees something that looks like a sequential read or write versus a random read or write, and they kind of lean a little bit more towards the random stuff. So they're just trying to keep the random access stuff in that cache. So that way, you know, you get much better performance if it's sitting in solid state and it's random access. But if they see a workload that just looks like media streaming... then they'll tend to not cache that, right? You're just playing a video. That video, if you play a 3 gigabyte video, it chances are it will not have overwritten the cache on the drive with that video content by the time you were done with it, done watching it, because they're just kind of tuned around that. And the drive doesn't look inside the data; it just looks at the pattern of how it's doing it. So whether it's encrypted or not, it's not going to matter as far as you know, how it affects the algorithm of the caching drive. The other way, which is where you have like, you know, like the OCZ, PCI Express, Revo hybrid, stuff like that. I don't think you can really encrypt those, at least not the way that you'd want to, because those use a driver overlay, and it's basically an SSD and a hard drive. Both, like, you actually see both of them in Windows when you start out. And you have to install a special driver that just makes the SSD kind of vanish, and it just becomes a cache, right?
Right.
And I don't think encryption solutions would really play nicely with that kind of stuff. You're just not sure what's actually being encrypted and what's not.
Always exciting. Yeah.
What was that last question that I think we kind of skipped?
Matt Butter, is there an easy way to clone a hard disk drive to a new SSD, or am I better off with a fresh install of Windows 8? And I'm tempted to say you're always better off with a fresh install of Windows 8, but having installed Windows 8 several times in the past couple months, I will say that CloneZilla and many of the other cloning applications do a fantastic job not only of copying your data off the drive, but also aligning it properly to an SSD.
Yep, a couple of solutions that tend to come with SSDs these days, if there's any kind of a bundle, and they're usually a company to just throw in the product code for one, even if there's no, even if it's not like an upgrade bundle per se that comes with the USB 3 adapter and all the other bells and whistles. It's usually like Paragon or Acronis, and they okay. both work. They both work pretty much the same way. You know, Clonezilla works as well. But I am with you, Patrick, though. If I have, say, more than 6 months on an install and I'm about to, really, you know, more than 6 months, yeah. It's time to clean house, probably. I will try to stretch a Windows install as long as I can, but if I'm upgrading the main drive, that's my cue to do the reinstall. Because then I'm actually kind of safe, relatively, because I've got all my old stuff sitting on the drive right there. Right. And then I can just kind of copy stuff over as I know I need it. And then if it's an old hard drive that you know you're just not going to use for anything else, you just take it and kind of stick it on a shelf for another couple of months. And then as you remember, like, oh, I needed this other thing. Right. You know, and the other and coming from the storage editor side of me, then you just forced yourself to make a backup, even though it might become old and stale. At least you have one. Right. Because so many people. They just don't. They don't do it, and they should. Like yeah. there should be a national backup day, like once
there,
a week.
There is a world. Well, yeah, there is a world backup day, but
I know, but one I know, world but it should not be not once, enough. Yeah, it's once a year. What? That's wrong. You're like they're doing it wrong. Everybody, back up your stuff. It's you know just this one day. Your hard drive crashed the day before, but oh, backup day was tomorrow. Oh no, I just lost a year of my stuff.
The first, I don't know, two and a half years of TechZilla, invariably, if we reminded somebody, we did it like every other week, to back up. Don't forget to back up your stuff. We got an email, you know, a couple, 3 days later and after the show had hit the web where it would either be like, thank you so much. I backed up. My hard drive died the next day. Or you bastards. I didn't listen to you. I didn't back up. And my hard drive died the next day. You know, and after about 5 years, people, I think everybody who's going to back up was pretty much backing up at that point. But, you know, 3, 2, 1, three copies, you know, yep. Two different devices, one off site, you know, the crash plan.
Or at least if you don't have an off site thing, at least get one. You could do an IO safe, right. Which I actually really like them, right? Because you have like the data's right there, it's live and it's happens to be fireproof and stuff. But if you can't do that, just go to Walmart or something or Target, buy a cheap little like firebox, like that mm-hmm. same kind of plastic material that's in the IO safe. It's in a box.
Right.
So they make just empty boxes with those that are far cheaper than an IO safe. So if you're worried yeah. about the money and then just take your external drive and just, you know, do your backup, unplug it,
put it in the fire safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Just put. You know, you don't even have to lock the lid even. The lids are so thick on those things. You could just, okay, there's the box back in the, you know, drives back in the box. Funk.
Close it. If there's a clasp on the firebox, close the clasp because you're going to feel really embarrassed if it falls to the, you know, next story of your house when that's it burns true. Down that's, and it opens true. Up and spills your hard drive out into the, you know, 1800, 2000 degree raging yes. inferno.
Then your backup is gone. Unfortunately, I'm sorry. It is.
I'm just saying. And on that bright and cheerful note, back it up, people. And I want to take a moment to thank Alan for checking in for Mr. Ryan Schrout, who is flying somewhere, well, in the air somewhere between Kentucky and Austin, Texas, after a couple days of intense investigation of processors we will not be able to discuss until he is back. Alan, anything exciting coming up at PC Per that you can talk about? Rumor has it you're working on a thing possibly involving storage.
Well, yes, of course. actually we've got a there's a I just finished all the testing on the Revo Drive 350, so we have a piece coming up on that is this little puppy. It's basically updated version of the Revo Drive. That's so you know, they put a nice little nifty heat sink kind of case on it, and so it actually cools the VCA chip directly.
Oh, nice.
Because it was a bit of a better plain design.
PCB before, and then this is essentially yeah. OCC's workstation grade SSD.
No, that's the consumer one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Revo. It's just like a replacement for the Revo drive, except the other major difference is it's the Shiba flash.
Okay.
Right. That's so, the big, because that's only the pair of SandForces. Oh wait, okay. This one's the four. This one's like the highest end, like regular Revo. And right, like one step before you get into the enterprise one. basically.
Got it.
So on the back, you can see it's like four sand forces with flash memory peppered around all four of them.
Gee whiz.
Well, hey,
that's a lot of memory controllers.
Yeah. Well, remember the R4 was a behemoth, like, you know, it could do like 1.6 or 3.2 terabytes, and it was eight sand forces all hanging off of one VCA chip. So the VCA chip, actually, getting back to our RAID discussion and how the SSD stuff doesn't scale very well on them, a VCA type chip is really the only thing that's a low latency enough thing that is, you know, it doesn't have any kind of cache memory to it. It doesn't have, it's just like a direct pipe that just happens to split in eight directions to go to eight SSD controllers. That's the only way you can get them to scale properly. and by scaling properly, I mean over 200,000 IOs per second scale.
Is there anything you're going to do at the consumer level that can even touch that? That just sounds like you know, Amazon order processing on Black Friday, Cyber Monday kind
cool.
of sanity.
That's what's cool about these. The VCA part is very, very similar between the consumer and the enterprise side on the Revo drives. So you're basically getting the enterprise stuff. It's just that they didn't scale it so high, you know, and make the capacity so big. So, yeah. We actually saw, there was a picture from CES. We saw the enterprise-like version of this guy, and it's going to be the same form mm-hmm. factor. So they're going to fit eight. Like, they'll you notice it's like a, you could potentially go dual PCB in that form factor. So you could just stack another PCB on there with another four sand forces, and you can have a, uh-oh, he's zooming in on the, what do you want to show, Burke? There, see? There's a lot of empty space in that guy, right? You could fit another one in there. I would. I'm crazy like that.
You know, there's just moments where, like, I want, but I cannot justify the price. Which kind of brings us back full circle to the Hawaii-based Radeon R9 2095 X2 Crossfire 4K gaming benchmarks that started today's episode.
Somebody
of this week in computer hardware. Oh, just wait until she's bouncing on your skull later on. Also, kitten teeth are just like little tiny.
Yeah, they're really sharp, unfortunately.
Yeah, they haven't dulled at all, so they just go right through your skin. That should be the title. It goes right through your skin. Oh, you're so cute. We have three chickens, two cats, and a dog at home. If I try to bring home another cat, my wife's going to kill me. Plus,
I just need a cat parrot. There we go.
All cat takes parrot. Is practice.
Arr. Yes, I will start teaching. Oh, cat parrot's eating my ear.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Malventano, PCPer.com. I'm Patrick Dorn. You can find me on TechZilla and DieTryon on YouTube or at TechZilla.com or DieTryon.com. I will say we had a lot of fun actually playing around with OpenELEC on Raspberry Pi this week on DieTryon, where we actually built a really nice, basically $35 set-top box. Okay, you can say you'd rather use a Chromecast, but we like building things. And we also had a lot of fun. Well, just go to DieTryon.com and check it out. There was no offensive fluids, and in the near future, we're showing off repairing a drone. It's amazing, actually. If you get a chance, fly a drone. That's all I'm going to say. That's it for this episode of Twitch. Thank you so much for listening and watching. Ryan Schrott will be back next week. I'm Patrick Dorton.
And I'm Alan Longfellow.
We'll see you next week on Twitch. Well, at least one of us, we think. We hope.